Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum, featuring cutting-edge conversations tailored to global security professionals. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. ISF CEO Steve Durbin speaks today with Matthew Doan, Senior Manager at BCG Platinian and Cybersecurity Policy Fellow at New America. They discuss growing your skill set and thinking creatively about what those skills include, finding deeper purpose in your work, and what the workforce of the future might look like.
So Matthew, great to see you. Thanks for stopping by. I was really interested looking at your profile. You seem to be doing some really fascinating things. I mean, your background alone, you know, working in things like US defense and intelligence communities, but now moving into being a cyber digital strategist at BCG Platinian, and also cybersecurity policy fellow at New America, looking at some of those sort of challenges of rapid technology and social change. It's a really varied and fascinating background. Tell us a little about how you got into that.
Sure. I'll give you a little bit of the journey, try to keep it concise. So I'd say my professional journey has been one that's very self-discovery oriented, that's intensified a lot in the last few years. So going into college, I really had no idea what I wanted out of life. I found my way into business and computer information systems as a focus. And then after the dot-com fiasco in the mid-2000s, I went into technology consulting. And I've generally been there ever since in one way or another. Cybersecurity has been a common thread that's lasted that entire time. And obviously, it's become more important. Early on, I tried to be very technical, really live in the ones and zeros, and found that wasn't for me. So over time, I found ways to be relevant. And I'll talk a little bit about that. I spent a number of years at Booz Allen Hamilton. It was a fascinating globe-trotting experience. Like you said before, national security, U.S. defense intelligence, and then working with partner nations across the world was a really fun thing, looking at global terrorism and other aspects, and also some cyber. Over time, then I focused on leading what we called our global commercial strategy practice. That was really about taking military-grade capabilities for cyber and bringing them to things like connected and autonomous vehicles, digitized manufacturing, even things like where geopolitics meets cyber between nation states. So it was pretty varied and interesting. I'm with Boston Consulting Group right now, focused generally on some of the big digital transformations that companies need to go through, whether that's e-commerce or supply chain of some sort. But going back to that notion of self-discovery, over the years, I found this wrestling with conformity, where I felt that I was having to fit a mold as far as get these technical certifications, have these technology skills, and it felt very uncomfortable for me. So I started pursuing other learnings, going a little bit more widely, got a degree in international relations in a graduate college, started studying philosophy, psychology, neuroscience, and history. And most people would say, why are you looking at all that? That has nothing to do with cybersecurity or technology consulting. But I found my way, right? And over time, I was influenced a lot by ancient Stoics, by American transcendentalism, like Ralph Waldo Emerson and Thoreau and others. And I started bringing all these things into my work, and people didn't know what I was trying to do, but it felt right and natural to me. Started building my value system, my worldview, and kind of bringing my consulting forward with these worldviews. And it's been different. It's been fun. I like to embrace who I am, not deviate from that. And where I've evolved beyond consulting is these days, is I'm taking all those passions and those worldviews and working on building a community right now, what I'm calling developing mastery in digital leadership. So I look at all of the technical experts that exist today, whether they're in cyber or data science or UX design, and many of them actually want to be leaders, but they don't know how to elevate themselves and become leaders. So I'm beginning to teach them the mindset and skill set on how to do that. So I really enjoy that coaching aspect. So that's kind of my journey to date.
Sounds great. I mean, it loads and loads of parallels there. I'm sure with people listening to this thinking, you know, if I'm working in a security role or perhaps thinking about getting into a security role, how do I do it? Maybe I don't have the right background. I think that sort of introduction there has hopefully put all of those prejudices to rest. You know, one of the really big challenges I think that we do face in security today is this skill shortage, right? So I think in some of our research that we've done, we're looking at sort of more than 3 million people shortfall in terms of the skills that are needed there. And that requires us to look more broadly outside of that, requires us to go into different areas, to really attract people into the profession? You know, you made a comment there about working in a variety of different areas across a range of different sort of practice areas, different skill sets. What did you find the reaction is to people when you tell them that you don't have perhaps a traditional pure play cyber background, and yet you're teaching them how to be more effective? I could just put it that way.
Oh, it's such a dichotomy, Steve. there's one camp of people that basically would tell me I'm wrong and you are not relevant anymore because you're pursuing all of these separate disciplines and you're not focusing on keeping your technical skills sharp. And some people wrote me off for that, even leaders at firms I've worked for. I didn't want to let that deter me though, because if I followed their lead, I'd be selling my soul and I wasn't willing to do that. So I said, I'm going to find a way to make this work. So as I would say, lead consulting engagements or mentor my team or just do general coaching for people that sought my advice or do some writing and blogging and those types of things, I would try to just bring it all and be like, here's what I'm about. Here's how I think these things can help you. Here's how you can take philosophy and use it in your day-to-day life. Here's how you can use this bit of psychology to improve relationships with leaders around you. If you're, say, a CISO and you need to grab the hearts and minds of other business leaders or CEO or board member, here's how you effectively interact with them. Here's how you play politics. And you're like, oh, these things start to make sense. So I started getting into a group where others would pick that up and appreciate what I had to say. And I'm just trying to stay true to that because I know there's an audience in this world that needs that sort of inspiration, needs that sort of teaching. And trust me, I know there's just boatloads of teachers and students out there that are learning the technical discipline. They're churning them out thousands and thousands per year. That's being taken care of. I'd rather spend some time in helping work through human nature so that we can get stuff done with all this great technology.
Yeah, and I think that's a, from my point of view anyway, that's a really sort of insightful perspective on it, because I think you're absolutely right. We have perhaps as a profession focused, I would suggest, perhaps overly on some of the technical componentry that's needed. We've got now, you know, AI coming through. We've got a whole pile of things that can be done. And one of the major shortages that I see, certainly if I look at, you know, a large number of organizations and talk to boards, are some of the softer skills, because clearly security technology, it's all pervasive. And you know, organizations need to understand it. It doesn't matter whether you're the chief marketing officer or whether you're the chief information officer, you need to have a common language. And that's so much more dependent upon the soft skills being in place. There's been a school of thought, though, hasn't there, that perhaps those skills are not as easy to teach as perhaps the technical skills. What's your view on that? Because you made the point there that, you know, you are just doing that. You are trying to teach some of these softer, more people-based skills.
Yeah, I don't buy it one bit. I'm big into the idea that the first thing anyone should learn is how to learn. There's a great course. Barbara Oakley has a course called Learning How to Learn. And there's all sorts of other great people out there like Scott Young and Cal Newport that teach you the basics of learning any new discipline and how to do it fast. Soft skills are just one of those things. It's separate from hard skills, technical skills. But you can learn the interpersonal communications, the dynamics of working in a bureaucratic organization. You can find ways to effectively mentor people, to give feedback. These things are all very learnable. The challenge, I think, though, is that in technology organizations, especially in cyber, that no one gets exposed to that through any curriculums, whether that be in university, whether that be studying for certifications, or even just some of the upskilling that a lot of people are forced to go through. And the leaders of these organizations don't emphasize its importance. They don't say, we as an entire unit need to be great at soft skills so that we can exponentially grow our capability. If they did, and everyone was forced to take it seriously and see the value in it and feel like they wanted to get better, this would get a lot better. But right now, I just don't think we're making it work. And I really look at the leaders of organizations. I kind of point the finger at them. First, I want to make sure that folks that are like CTOs, CIOs, CISOs, or even just running smaller organizations, product management, that they truly understood the value of developing their own soft skills and then embodying that with their team and then making it something that excites the others, that really others want to develop it too. So I really point at leaders as being the crux, the ones that can make it happen.
So, you know, I'm sure we've got a number of those very people listening at the moment, and some of them probably sitting there saying, okay, but where do I start? You know, I don't know how to change. I don't know what steps I need to go through. If Matthew's really onto something here and it gives me some form of advantage in whatever way, what do I do about it?
Yeah, there's not been a lot of concentrated material on this. In fact, I'm actually writing a book on how to do just this for people in digital organizations because I see the need. Right. But generally what you see is all this general leadership advice that's feels very foreign and abstract. You've got Simon Sinek talking at you or some former CEO of Company X talking about leadership principles. And it's like, how do I work with that within my technology organization? And then at the other end of the spectrum, you basically have corporate learning and development trying to give you some boring slides and you don't even want to be there because it's so painful. What I've found is that especially since COVID, there's this new rise in ed technology and education technology that's very exciting that I'd love to see companies and leaders support that people go pursue these things. You start to see things like this massive rise in what they call cohort-based classes. It's coming out of Silicon Valley where you can go learn a very targeted skill like how do you be a masterful online writer? Or how do you get really good at feedback? Or how do you navigate corporate politics? Like there's some very concentrated skills that you can go learn. There's also places like mastermind groups that you could get involved in or even start on your own for free. I've seen some people do that. And then you can also look at general coaching programs, executive coaches, people that are experienced in elevating someone's personal soft skills and helping them move up the chain. There's just a lot of non-corporate methods that are available that I would love to see people pursue.
And again, you know, I'm sure people are listening to this thinking, well, that's all well and good, but how am I going to find the time for that? And frankly, at the moment, it's all going to be on Zoom or Teams or whatever it happens to be. And, you know, come the end of the day, I've just had enough of it. I've had enough of the screen. How do we overcome that problem?
Yeah, that's a big one right now. I've found that in the best ways to implement any skill that you learn, this is not knowledge to you, of course, but after you absorb the content, you've got to go through practicing it. You have to apply it. You go from understanding to application to mastery. And to go through that process is a very deliberate thing. So if I were, say, a mid-level manager and I knew I needed to raise my communication skills, I would find someone to hold me accountable first off. Maybe it's the C-suite executive in my organization. Maybe it's the executive director who's a mentor. Like, all right, over the next 4 weeks, we're going to go through an experiment. We're going to put me through the ringer a little bit. And I'm going to test out being the leader of this group facilitated conversation or take on some other skills that are out of my comfort zone. And you're going to hold me accountable and we're going to talk at the end of every week. And just getting some simple accountability mechanisms in place. Like I talk to my wife every night, like, did I hit the goals I had in my life, professional and personal? She's like, why didn't you? I'm like, all right, great point. But if we as humans don't have accountability mechanisms, we are lazy. We don't do it. Like that's the same reason you download a digital course and it's on demand and only 20% of people ever do it because they're lazy. You have to find accountability in your life. That's why I say university systems with small groups still work because we humans look to show each other that we're useful and that we're valuable, but left to our own devices, we're in trouble. So really getting accountability, I think, is the other piece.
Requires a certain amount of bravery as well, though, don't you think, to put yourself out there? You know, if you happen to be, let's say, you know, stick with the example you gave, a middle manager, for instance, perhaps in a security function, who is really clear on what his or her job function might require and has all of the metrics around that. But then to step outside of that is a bit of a leap into the unknown for many, don't you think?
It is. It is. And here's the thing that I've seen. Say if you've got 100 technical experts, say in a cybersecurity organization, and they've got every certification you could ever want. There's maybe 5 or 10 of those people that would even want to elevate into a leadership position to want to develop their soft skills, because many people are very content at just staying strong in their technical discipline. And we need those people. We need the distinguished architects, the level 3 threat hunter, the malware reverse engineer. We need all of those things. But the small set of people that choose to raise their hand and say, I want to be something bigger, I want to lead, those are the people that I think will find the bravery. And then we need to support those very few people to help their evolution. It's not going to be everyone at all. It's going to be a very small percentage. So hopefully that'll be the catalyst as they raise their hand and they're willing to step out of their comfort zone. And then they need that support and accountability.
A small number, as you say, but a very important component of that security mix, particularly as I look at security today, I'm always struck by just the importance of being able to manage successfully this intersection, the interchange, if you like, between technology and people. It really, to me, seems to underpin all of the components of success or indeed failure. If we get it right, then it works very, very well. Unfortunately, we're not that good at getting it as right. And we see that reflected in things like security awareness that perhaps doesn't quite hit the spot. We see it in terms of, unfortunately, in the industry, burnout, overwork, you know, people not sort of raising their hands and saying, hey, there's either a better way of doing this, or we just need to take it down a beat or two so that we can all grab breath and go forward again, because it is a hugely demanding, hugely full-on space in which we work. What are the sorts of things that you have seen at organizations perhaps that you've consulted to that really would stand out for you as being examples of good practice in that space, where they've really managed to get, you know, people and machine, if you like, working together in harmony?
I love that. Yeah. And acknowledging where AI is going, we need to be more cognizant. I like to think about how humans always need to figure out how they seek higher ground from the machines, right? Because they're becoming more exponentially capable. You've got all sorts of automation. I'm not so much a dystopian person, but robots are taking jobs in some way, shape, or form, and we need to be cognizant of that and always find ways to level up. So what I've seen essentially is some leaders take certain CISOs. For example, they actually have conversations with their teams on like a quarterly or half year basis to understand, what is technology looking like to us? How is it in our organization? How do we feel about all that we've implemented? What it means to our jobs? What it means to our own development? I've seen some very vulnerable conversations where people say, hey, I'm burned out. You guys are asking us to implement everything. I don't even see the value anymore. I can't connect what I'm doing to any sort of mission delivery that our business is bringing to the world. I'm so disconnected. So that's like one important finding that comes out. Other aspects would be like, hey, I just feel like I'm some monotonous robot building another robot. And I need more purpose. I need more understanding of how I can prosper because I don't feel very value added. I had one person tell me just the other day, a person that I mentor, she said that she simply feels like a bridge between two software applications. She takes data from one AI and then basically pulls it to another AI to do the data. She does some minimal translation and cleanup. And he goes, someone's going to take that bridging job soon. What am I supposed to do? I don't see any value in this. So it goes to that age-old leadership dilemma of making sure that you can push down the idea of purpose. So if one organization's mission, say, is to deliver clean water to the world, how do you translate that to a security group within there? How do we ensure that we are protecting the systems and getting people excited about the delivery of drills and well water to people in Africa so that they may have a livelihood? How do you connect all of that for them and keep them invigorated? Because inevitably people get tired and burned out, and you as a leader need to bring ways to reinvigorate them. And sometimes you need to change their jobs, give them new responsibilities, new challenges to get them out of that cycle that's really putting them in a bad place.
Yeah, I'm sitting here listening to you and I'm just sort of reflecting on the fact that what you're describing is, I would say, the need for a maturing of the way in which the industry operates. And, you know, maybe some of the challenges that we're facing are down to the fact that security is a relatively young industry. I say relatively young, it's been around for quite some while, but hasn't been recognized as such. If you look back to when, you know, the first CISO was appointed, you know, back in the 90s. So the time isn't that great. And yet we've seen so much change, so much, I suppose, requirement for agility and flexibility. And I'm wondering whether it's because of that, that we haven't had the time to sort of step back to just think about how it is that we're going to take people forward in this particular space with all of the necessary components that that requires. So, you know, hiring strategy, development strategy, back into sort of workforce planning, the real sort of basics of human resource thinking in an organization. We've just sort of assumed that we'll take guys from technology, chuck them at it, and they will sit there and do these things. So are we at a point, do you think, where we just need to be stepping back and reassessing and looking at things through a different light? Or do you think that things have gone much further than that and we need something much more radical to address some of the issues we've just been talking about?
I think we need something more radical. Like, there's a great warning sign to me that we're still having the same cyber risk conversation as 15 years ago. And we have yet to solve for that in a meaningful way, just as one small data point. But to your point, Steve, I think there's been a lack of career development and just professionalizing what that looks like for cybersecurity individuals. Because what you see is that they just take the next highest offer, 20% pump up, and the next one, they'll go to the next company. And every 12 to 18 months, they're going place to place. And They just take the next highest offer because they have no reason to stay unless you have this amazing dynamic leader or the business has a mission that really speaks to you. There's no real reason to stay. So you're bouncing around from place to place to place. And the challenge, I think, is that the security organization is still relatively back office and isolated and is its own bubble. And people still see them as the police that are always telling everyone no. And that's a tough place to be. You don't feel like you're providing as much value, so you're going to take the next highest offer. Instead, what I would love to see, and I've seen this in some organizations, mostly in financial services companies, where you start thinking about, okay, how do we take security talent and start bringing them to other parts of the organization? How do we actually do things like rotational programs to push others out into other places, say they might work in the chief risk officer organization or some business unit that's revenue producing? And then you swing others in so they understand what cybersecurity is all about. And then you start making it interesting, and then you show that people can develop a very broad and durable set of skills that help them for years to come. And it shakes it up for them too. So I would love to see that you have security leaders ignite this, but then you have other business leaders, CEO and such, support the movement of people around organizations to shake it up and keep it interesting. That's one method I'd suggest.
I like that. You know, I talk a lot about the fact that we need to have very, very small pure play security departments, because the security work should be done outside in other parts of the company. It's the only way you're going to get people to take responsibility. Security for me isn't something that you do to somebody. It is something that everybody has to do for the common good. And I think, you know, you've just been suggesting there what I would think to be a very, very effective way of spreading the word when it comes to security. Matthew, it's been absolutely fascinating talking to you about some of these different areas. You brought this whole sort of energy and new perspective, and I particularly like sort of drawing in all these different examples that you gave there. So thank you very much indeed for that. Some really useful takeaways as well for people, I think, that they can put into practice and hopefully may encourage some of them to be just a little bit braver and to do some of the things that you were talking about. So thank you very much indeed for taking the time. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, same. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate the time.
This conversation with Matthew Doan brings to a close this season of the ISF podcast, which is focused on creating your future workforce. We thank all our season's guests. Next week, we are bringing you a bonus episode, an encore presentation of Steve's season one interview with mathematician and author Dr. Hannah Fry. We'll be back with a new season in June, focusing on security in the context of business, including mergers and acquisitions, startups, scaling up, risk, and more. In the meantime, visit securityforum.org to suggest a topic or a question for the podcast, or to access our catalog of video and podcast episodes. While you're there, explore ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like these. You can find us on LinkedIn by searching CEO Steve Durbin or Security Forum. If you follow our audio feed wherever you get your podcasts, you'll never miss an episode. And if you'd take a moment to quickly rate the podcast and write a short review, we'd be grateful. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox and Tavia Gilbert. Music by Alexander Filipiak. Associate producer, Katie Flood. Mix and master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.